From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
Public employee pensions have been front and center in the ongoing Stockton bankruptcy case, drawing national attention. But cities like Stockton aren't the only governmental bodies grappling with paying for promises made to employees. The state of California has its own issues. Has the recent upsurge in the stock market fixed the problem for public employee pension funds? Or does more need to be done? We'll talk to Ryan Miller, an expert on public employee pensions with the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office, and John Ortiz, who writes the Sacramento Bee's State Worker blog, one of the state capitol's most authoritative reporters on public employee issues.
We'll also hear from Roger Phillips, a reporter for the Stockton Record who's been covering the Stockton bankruptcy proceedings, Mike Fitzgerald, a political columnist for the Stockton Record, and Bill McEwen, the editorial page editor for the Fresno Bee.
Public employee pensions. Exactly how defined is the benefit?
Additional funding for the Maddie Report made possible by a grant from Paramount Agricultural Companies, growing healthy food for you and your family.
From the California Channel at the State Capitol, Valley PBS, and the Maddie Institute, it's the Maddie Report with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. In 2012, California enacted pension reform. Most of the reforms focused on new rather than current public employees. So how have those reforms fared? Our guest is Ryan Miller from the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office, and he's here to tell us about what happened. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so CalPERS, the big public employee pension fund, what is its current unfunded liabilities?
Well, CalPERS administers retirement programs both for the state but also for local governments. The total for all of those groups is about $100 billion. The state, including CSU employees, makes up about half of that, or around $50 billion.
So $100 billion, just to put it in perspective, is that's about the size of the state budget, right?
Yeah, though those are liabilities that were accrued over time, whereas the state budget is sort of an annual figure.
An annual thing. Okay, I'm just trying to put it in some context.
But yeah, that's right. The state budget, around $110 billion.
Okay, so let's talk about the legislation that was enacted to address the problem. What changes were made?
Well, in 2012, the legislature and governor passed a bill commonly referred to as PEPRA. Made a number of changes to public employee pension policy. For example, employees who start after January 2013 will have to work a little bit longer, a few years longer, to enjoy the same level of pension benefits as employees that were hired before that date. It also addressed some practices that were criticized by some, for example, spiking, whereby employees would earn higher salaries at the end of their career, would sort of ratchet up their payments.
So just to be clear about that, the way the pension system works, typical defined, what's called defined benefit plan, which is traditional pension, is they base it on your a lot of in private sector it's last 3 years, but in California it's your last highest, or not your last, your highest salary.
Yeah, it's the last 12 months, but that was changed. So for employees who start after that date, it's the last 3 years.
Right, for new employees, but for current employees.
So it varies per group, yeah.
Right.
Another important change was that it established a goal for all public employees to pay for half of the normal costs of their pensions, which is sort of the annual cost of the pension benefits they earn in a year. Most state employees already pay that much. But it will affect some groups. For example, judges will have to pay more.
Well, the normal cost, though, is not the same as the total cost, because there's unfunded liability from previous generations. So what you're saying is current employees are going to pay their cost for their pension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about the anticipated savings? How much money do they think that these changes were going to save the state and local governments?
CalPERS estimates that the savings will range between $42 billion and $55 billion over the next 30 years. Now, the savings would start out to be pretty modest, but as these PEPRA employees make up a larger percent of the public employee workforce, it'll grow to be quite substantial.
So as the new employees come in under the new system with a little tighter rules, it's going to have a greater effect. So over time, it's going to get bigger.
That's right.
Okay. So CalPERS recently changed some of its assumptions regarding the increase in cost to governments for funding these pensions. What are these changes, and aren't these changes then going to increase liability? It's going to make it even greater? for local governments?
Well, it's going to increase the cost for local government, for state and local governments. For example, in the spring, CalPERS conducts these periodic, what they call experience studies, that looks at the assumptions that they make about mortality and a host of other things, and compares it to observations that they make in their population to determine whether they're still appropriate. In the spring, they revisited the mortality assumption, in particular for men who appear to be living longer.
That's good news.
Yeah, it's good news for us. But this will affect certain pools that are predominantly male, like, say, highway patrol officers, and it'll also affect that group because patrol officers tend to retire earlier in life, so if they live longer, that really increases the cost of their pension benefits.
They tend to be male, and they tend to live longer, so there you go. So the market, we're dealing with the market, you know, CalPERS invests the money. The market goes up and down, and the last few years, frankly, we've had a pretty good market. And notwithstanding some of the ups and downs that have happened recently, are those recent market gains reducing the size of the unfunded liabilities with CalPERS?
Yeah, so there's a couple things going on. I mean, it'll definitely reduce the size of those unfunded liabilities compared to if they were just at the average return. But at the same time, these mortality assumptions combined with other changes they've made recently to kind of shorten the period of time over which we pay for these liabilities, we expect those changes are going to continue to increase state and local contributions. But these gains will certainly soften the blow.
So kind of two steps forward, one step back.
In a way, it's complex. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
I'm trying to make it simple.
Sure, sure.
What about the discount rate? That's the percentage increase that CalPERS assumes it's going to make on its investments. I mean, right now, I think it's 7.5%. Mm-hmm. Is that number realistic?
Yeah, so actually CalPERS and CalSTRS as well have both brought that number down in recent years to reflect some of the huge losses that they recognized in the late 2000s. The number now, 7.5, appears in line with historical averages. It also is appropriate, we think, given the asset mix that the pension system has. That said, there's a substantial risk, though, that these investment returns might not meet that assumption in the longer run, and the legislature and the state's elected leaders need to be aware of that. And it's one of the reasons that our office has urged caution in adopting new spending programs and we've urged paying down these debts as quickly as possible.
I think the term is fiscally prudent. You'd probably agree with that. We're talking with Ryan Miller, a pension expert with the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office. CalSTRS is the Teachers Retirement Fund, and it's had its own share of issues. Over the past few years, your office has called attention to the CalSTRS funding problem. Just how big a problem is it?
Well, the latest estimates have the unfunded liability at about $74 billion. An important distinction there was that CalSTRS didn't have the authority to increase rates and kind of address this problem. It was something that the legislature and governor had to do, and it was a plan that they enacted in the budget last year.
So CalPERS, they can change it. Their board can change some of those rules.
That's right. They can increase employer rates. So say the state will have to pay more when the market comes down, but CalSTRS didn't have that ability.
CalSTRS, the legislature has to make that decision, and of course, it's a teacher situation, and there's lots of teachers, and so politically, it might be challenging to change some of those rules. Is that
certainly a difficult decision? It's a lot of money, and so they're difficult decisions.
Okay. So recently there was an attempt to get a handle on the problem. What exactly did the legislature do then?
So in the budget plan this year, the legislature and governor enacted a plan to address this problem over the next 32 years. The school districts will pay around 70% of the costs, the state will pay around 20%, and then the teachers the remaining 10%. I think a noteworthy part of this, under California case law, you can't increase the contributions of existing employees. But this plan does so by essentially guaranteeing or vesting, as it's called in pension policy, a benefit the teachers receive that adjusts their pensions upward by 2% a year in retirement. They weren't guaranteed that before. They are now. And so the legislature and governor were able to ask them to pay a little bit of this funding plan.
Because under law, there has to be this thing called an offsetting advantage.
That's right.
And
yeah.
So this is the offsetting advantage. They're That's allowed right, then yeah. to make these changes.
And it's a little bit different for, as we talked about Pepper in the last segment, it's a little bit different for teachers that were hired before 2013 and after 2013, but that's the gist of it, yeah.
Okay. So we were talking before about the recent gains in the stock market and how it affects unfunded liability. It drives it down a little bit. But, the market has downturns, too. It goes up, it goes down. Mm-hmm. Isn't that more likely than not? And so is that unfunded liability really taken care of by an up market?
Well, and so, yeah, that's obviously a concern. As we discussed, CalSTRS didn't have the ability to change these rates. Now, for the school district rates and for the state rates, part of this funding plan gives CalSTRS some limited authority within some bounds, but to adjust that and try to keep the plan on track. So hopefully that'll help keep it on track if there are, in addition to just the big downturns, also if there's a big, boom market, state and school district rates will decrease slightly in that case as well.
Okay, so the legislature and the governor have taken some steps to deal with public employee pensions. Mm-hmm. But that's not all there is. There's also public employee retiree health insurance. What's the outstanding liability there?
Yeah, so the state provides retiree health and dental benefits to its employees and CSU employees as well. The latest estimate for that is about $65 billion.
Okay, so is there money being set aside to deal with that liability?
So whereas for pension benefits, the way the state funds those is that it pays for them during the employees' working years. We set aside money, we invest it, and we use the investment returns decades later to pay for part of the cost of the benefit. We don't do that for retiree health benefits. And as a result, it's a much more costly way to pay for it.
So it's a pay-as-you-go
system? It's a pay-as-you-go system.
So under like the public employee pensions, we're using some of that interest or the investments returns and that money to pay down the cost. Mm-hmm. But with retiree health, no.
That's right.
Okay. So what are the LAO's suggestions on addressing the outstanding long-term liability with public employee health insurance?
Well, for a while, we've suggested that the state gradually move to a plan where we fully fund, we pre-fund retiree health benefits just like we do for pension benefits. It would be costly. The latest estimates are almost $2 billion a year in addition to what we pay already. But while it would increase our costs in the near term, the very long-term savings over the next few decades would be substantially lower.
So pay me now or pay me a lot more later.
That's essentially how it works in pension policy. Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank Ryan Miller with the Legislative Analyst Office for joining us. We're now joined by John Ortiz, who writes the Sacramento Bee's State Worker blog. That's a must-read for anyone who wants to be up to date on public employee issues in California. Welcome back to the Matty Report.
Thanks for having me.
So, Stockton, they've got some pension issues over there that have had national news implications. Can you briefly summarize the Stockton situation?
Well, Stockton is bankrupt, and it's now struggling to figure out how much to pay its creditors. It's going to offer a plan to do that. And it's upside down for a number of reasons, not the least of which is its pension obligations.
So my understanding is they've settled with most of their creditors except for the Franklin Templeton Fund. I guess they owe them $32 million, and they don't want to pay the $32
million. That's right.
So anything else you want to add to that in terms of where's the bankruptcy judge on this, by the way?
Well, what he has said is that pensions can be touched by bankruptcy, which is a significant finding because it's been thought that pensions were ironclad, that the promises couldn't be broken once made. The judge has said from the court, Judge Klein, from the bench, he said they can be broken. That's what bankruptcy is all about.
It's just one more obligation.
It's one more obligation. And now they're going to offer a plan, apparently, that will not include breaking their pension obligations, which will create an interesting situation legally.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Well, isn't Stockton's part of Stockton's problem is they were a little generous in their benefits, particularly to public safety, police and fire.
Yeah, that's right. And this is true across the spectrum that in terms of pension obligations, you'll see your police and fire have some of the best benefits. For example, somebody who worked for 20 years, retired at 50, and had an $80,000 salary when they left, if they live for 30 years, their pension would be about $1.2 million total before cost of living. So you could wind up with situations and do where somebody makes more as a pensioner than they did when they were working.
I was actually looking at statistics, and they said that the average pension for 112 Stockton police and fire employees who retired in the last 5 years was over $88,000 compared to $70,000 for the 490 Sacramento police and fire that have retired in that same time. So anyway, some interesting numbers. Some argue, though, that Stockton's pension obligations really are problematic because they take a bigger and bigger cut out of the general fund for the city, which means fewer parks, streets aren't being maintained, and less police and fire. The city, on the other hand, says, no, we have to maintain these pensions because if we don't, we're going to have a mass exodus of existing employees and we're not going to be able to get new employees.
Right.
Now, you wrote recently about a Boston College study that found a link between the quality of the pension plan and the quality of employees. What did they find?
What they found was that when people leave the private sector and go into government, they generally earn 7% less. And so what they said was that there's a quality gap of employees. Assuming that the best employees make the most money, there's a gap in the quality of employees between government and the private sector. But if the pension plan is better, that gap narrows. They concluded that you're in trouble if you cut pensions too deeply because you're going to affect the quality of your workforce.
So some support for the Stockton argument. The bankruptcy judge is still to rule on the Stockton plan coming out of bankruptcy. But isn't the key question there whether Stockton is presenting a plan that's going to restore the city to solvency and it's not going to relapse into a second bankruptcy?
Well, yes, that's absolutely right. Vallejo entered into bankruptcy and emerged in 2011 and did not touch its pension obligations. It's now facing the distinct possibility it could have to file for bankruptcy again.
So the bankruptcy judge in Stockton is probably looking at Vallejo. And
he has said that. He has said that he's very mindful that he doesn't want to see this come back around in a few years.
Mm-hmm. So let's say he approves the plan. All his comments about the bankruptcy law, you know, supersedes any other rights regarding pensions, don't they become kind of moot?
They do from a legal standpoint. They don't carry any legal weight. I think, though, that this is another step in changing the dynamic of public pensions. I think this is another warning shot to unions that the golden goose can be killed, that notion that pensions can't be changed no matter what is probably flawed. And that could affect, I think, down the road, negotiations for salary and benefits.
Okay, let's take a look at local other cities. You've got Vallejo, you've got San Bernardino. What are local governments doing to kind of address this problem?
Well, we've seen in Ventura County recently, there was a measure that the court stopped because they said it was illegal. It was going to try to pull new employees out of the pension system altogether and give them a defined contribution.
Like a 401k type.
A 401k type of plan. But I think right now the atmospherics are just not there to really move ahead with something significant. We've got the state plan's just not quite 2 years old to lower pension promises, and the economy's come back.
All right, so the investments of CalPERS and others have gotten a little better, so the liability doesn't look as great.
And voters' 401ks are looking better.
Right, people are happier.
Right.
We're talking with John Ortiz, who writes the Sacramento Bee's State Worker blog. So the public employee situation, is it getting better or worse? One public pension abuse that was targeted was something called spiking, where you inflate your salary through promotions and other means to hike your retirement benefits. There was a report done by the state controller, John Chung, that indicated that CalPERS may not be adequately addressing the problem. What were his findings?
Well, he said that the fund doesn't have enough staff to conduct rigorous audits, that it's lax in checking for spiking. And for example, if they audited everybody in the system at the rate that they do now, about 100 a year, it would take 66 years to get all the way through every employer.
So highly unlikely that we're going to, well, probably need more staffing. He might make a good point
there. That's exactly right.
Okay, so they're also, CalPERS recently voted 7-5 to count more than 100 kinds of supplemental and temporary pay towards calculating pensions. Governor Brown was not pleased with that. He's saying, listen, that undermines the pension reform that we passed 2 years ago. Is this a matter of two steps forward and one step back?
Well, I know that the local government certainly thinks so, because that's where you see a lot of this kind of abuse. But CalPERS took the position that they're not mom, and they don't make the locals eat their vegetables, and that the local governments have the power through better management at the bargaining table. They can limit this kind of stuff. And so that's kind of where it sits. The labor-influenced CalPERS board the members who are more leaning toward those interests, that's the position they took.
They probably take the position that, listen, that's collective bargaining, negotiate the table. And so really the focus is on city management and county management to negotiate prudently for the on the employer side.
Right.
Okay, Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court also ruled recently that CalPERS can sue rating agencies over high ratings that they gave to investments that collapsed in 2007, 2008. And specifically, CalPERS has this $1.3 billion investment in 2006 on products that were rated, had the highest rating from Moody's and Standard & Poor's, even though these products consisted largely of high-risk subprime mortgages. So what are the chances that CalPERS is going to win this battle?
Well, I think they're going to be like Franklin Templeton at Stockton, and they're going to wind up getting some pennies on the dollar. What I find interesting about this is that they still use Moody's for approving, that's one of the seals of approval for their investments. So, yeah, there's a lot of sound and fury, but I don't know that it signifies much here.
Yeah, okay. Well, the other thing that the LEO points out is, besides public employee pensions, we've got this whole issue of public employee retiree health care. And they're saying that's now the state's biggest liability. Do you foresee the legislature or the governor tackling this issue in the near future?
I think the governor is very interested in this. He mentioned it very briefly in a debate that he had with his Republican gubernatorial rival, Neel Kashkari. He made a passing mention about health benefits and wanting to bring down that cost. And I would not be surprised if you see this as a second term. He's done pensions. Now he's going to turn to health care.
So health care, though, is the way I understand it, is it's a pay-as-you-go system.
Right.
So there's no money set aside.
Yes.
And so isn't one of the big problems, we were talking about this in an earlier segment, one of the big problems is, at least with pensions, you put money aside and you can earn money on that money, which makes your liability less. That's not true in public employee health.
Right.
Healthcare.
It's like paying interest only on your credit card, and the balance just keeps going up.
Right.
And that's why I think he needs to have that as a legacy agenda to tackle, and I think that is going to happen.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at the local level. I mean, what's happening there at places like San Diego, San Jose?
Well, with regard to pensions, Ventura County had a measure. It was pulled back. Chuck Reed, of course, has been trying to push a statewide measure.
He's no the Democratic luck mayor from San Jose.
That's right. No luck there. And I just think that the atmospherics right now are not there. You've got court action with some of the stuff that's happened in San Jose and San Diego. And I think a lot of the local efforts are just kind of sitting back right now to let the dust settle before they move ahead.
Do you see things happening at the bargaining table? If nothing happens at the state legislature, up here in Sacramento, what about at the bargaining table where public employers say, listen, we foresee our liability going, getting greater. We're not going to be able to build or maintain parks. We're not going to be able to maintain streets.
Right. Yeah, I think that pensions are and those kinds of benefits are definitely going to get harsher treatment at the bargaining table. I think the trade-off will be you're going to see a push for higher pay. If you shrink retirement benefits, you have to make it up with pay.
Yeah, you've made the analogy of pay and benefits is really like a balloon. If you press on one side, it kind of comes out on the other side.
Yes.
What about the governor's proposal, was a couple of years ago, I guess, on kind of a hybrid approach, where you have like a 401k plus a traditional pension equals like 70% of your salary in retirement. Mm-hmm. Is that going to get any traction maybe in the future?
It might. I think that there are some problems when you begin to introduce those kinds of formulas in because somebody has to administer those defined contributions, and that can be expensive. The argument is that defined benefits are cheaper to administer, but if you're not paying as much on the front end and you don't have to pay as much on the back end, maybe it makes sense.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see. Well, I want to thank John Ortiz from the Sacramento Bee's State Worker Blog, as well as Ryan Miller from the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office for joining us.
Up next, what impact will the federal bankruptcy judge's decision in the Stockton case have on public employee pensions in the San Joaquin Valley? We'll talk to Roger Phillips, a reporter for the Stockton Record who's been covering the Stockton bankruptcy proceedings, Mike Fitzgerald, a columnist with the Stockton Record, and Bill McEwen, the editorial page editor for the Fresno Bee.
From News Talk 580-1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We've generally been talking about the state's public employee pension issues, but what about the public employee pension issues in the San Joaquin Valley, particularly in light of the recent Stockton bankruptcy decision? We're now joined by Roger Phillips and Mike Fitzgerald with the Stockton Record and Bill McEwen with the Fresno Bee. Welcome all of you to the Mattie Report.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great to have you here. So, Mike, let's start with you. You're a political columnist for the Stockton Record. You've been watching this. Why don't you let our audience know how Stockton got into its financial situation? What caused Stockton's problems?
Well, first of all, Stockton has the same low-wage agrarian economy that is endemic throughout the San Joaquin Valley. That economy pays people less, so government collects fewer tax dollars, which is to say we were a city of modest means to begin with, but we spent like we were Huntington Beach on a lavish public employee compensation and very expensive capital projects. And then when the recession started, instead of making the tough calls and the necessary cuts, the city doubled down on debt by floating a huge bond issue. And a bond, for those who don't know it, is nothing more than the city whipping out its credit card and going into more debt. When the recession deepened, the revenue fell off a cliff, and Stockton became insolvent.
That's okay. That's a great summary. So, Bill, let me ask you. You're watching. You've been here for a long time. You've seen stuff in the Valley, in Fresno in particular. Is Stockton a cautionary tale for other Valley cities, or are Stockton's financial challenges unique to Stockton?
Well, I believe it's a cautionary tale. However, I think that, most cities saw the handwriting on the wall. If you take an example of Clovis, which made cuts right away to deal with the recession, that's one way to do it. I think that Fresno saw what was happening in Stockton and put on the brakes just in time.
Okay. So, Roger, why don't you walk us through what happened when Stockton declared bankruptcy? Why weren't Stockton and its creditors able to reach an agreement on the bankruptcy plan, at least initially?
Well, actually, Stockton did reach pretrial agreements with all of its creditors practically a year ago.
What about Franklin Templeton? Franklin Templeton was the holdout, wasn't it?
Well, Franklin Templeton held out. It had made a $35 million loan to the city in 2009 to do things like repair streets and build new police and fire stations and a police communications center and some new parks. But during pretrial mediation and on into the bankruptcy itself, the city and Franklin were never able to cut a deal. We don't really know what the city offered during negotiations, which were confidential. But in terms of the plan of adjustment, Stockton ended up proposing to repay about 1 cent on the dollar to Franklin. There was some collateral on the loan, some parks and golf courses that the city basically said were valueless.
But
Franklin argued they were worth $15 million. The judge ended up setting the value of those items at $4 million and then wound up approving 1 cent on the dollar for the additional loan.
I want to ask you about that 1 cent on the dollar. My understanding is Stockton was a little more generous with its other creditors, paying as much as 50 cents on the dollar. Is that, do you have
that
information? Or?
Stockton's argument throughout the whole thing was that collateral counted, and the collateral, there were certain things they didn't want to lose, like the arena that they had built, and there were other things that they deemed as not being all that valuable to begin with, and so they were willing to risk those types of items, like the parks, like the golf course. And Franklin argued, well, we're only getting 1 cent. Essentially, with the $4 million that it got for those parks and golf courses, it really did get about 12% back on its loan, which is still not a lot of money, as the judge acknowledged, but it's not 1% either.
So the judge steps in October, and he makes some comments questioning the sanctity of public employee pensions in bankruptcy proceedings. Roger, what exactly did he say?
Well, the Judge Klein had indicated throughout the trial, for months and months and months, even before the trial, that he was thinking seriously about CalPERS and whether pension agency contracts should be immune in bankruptcy proceedings, which is what CalPERS would like.
So they couldn't be touched.
CalPERS, that they couldn't be touched. Mm-hmm. And CalPERS and Stockton argued that there would be essentially a $1.6 billion termination fee for liability for Stockton if it backed out of the CalPERS contract.
So that was the sort of Damocles also, over the city's head then?
Right.
Okay.
The city also argued that without being able to offer its employees CalPERS, it would not have a viable alternative to offer its employees as far as a pension. Current employees would leave the city, and no one would ever take a job with the city again, and the city would be basically unable to function. Klein wound up ruling that Stockton and other cities could, in fact, break their contract with CalPERS and that the termination liability was not enforceable. But there was really nothing binding about his opinion, and he wound up approving Stockton's plan of adjustment, even though the city did not actually seek to terminate its CalPERS contract.
I wanted to ask you that, Roger. Why? Why did the judge turn around a month later and say he's going to approve the Stockton plan when it didn't cut pensions?
Well, basically, first of all, Klein's options regarding the plan of adjustment were basically a thumbs up or a thumbs down. He did not have the power to impose on the city an order that it must propose a plan that impaired CalPERS. But as for why he didn't at least reject the plan and hint broadly to the city that it might want to revisit the pension issue, I think there were several factors. One was that Klein said himself that Stockton's employees, and particularly its retirees, had already suffered enough. In the process of Stockton developing its plan, retirees basically gave back lifetime medical care, which was a liability the city had assessed to be worth $544 million. Klein also said Stockton's employees would be the, quote, real victims of any adjustment to the city's CalPERS contract. And he said that slashing pensions would represent a violation of union contracts, which would have run counter to a 30-year-old ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Known as the Bill Disco decision, I believe.
It called the rejection of employee collective bargaining agreements a, quote, last resort legally. Right. So I think all of these factors definitely played into his decision not to at least try to push Stockton harder in that direction.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I think that extra month from when he said CalPERS contracts could be impaired and to the time he actually ruled, he may have been wishfully hoping that Franklin and Stockton could cut some kind of deal with that extra time, but that never happened.
I was probably hoping that his earlier opinion might put some pressure on the city to change his position, perhaps. But Mike Fitzgerald, I want to ask you, you're a political columnist for the Stockton Record. What do you think of the bankruptcy judge's ruling?
I think it was the right call. There were two huge issues. There was a legal issue of whether pensions could be cut, but there's also what you might call the business issue of whether pensions should be cut. Again, as Roger said, CalPERS was never the city's largest creditor, as many erroneously assumed. The public employees were the city's largest creditor. So Franklin's objections that, hey, we're getting a haircut, but CalPERS is getting away unscathed, were simply erroneous. The public employees lost free lifetime retiree medical for themselves and their spouses. That was a $400,000 benefit, and they gave that up. So they made their share of sacrifices, and to take their pensions away would not only have been unfair to them, thrusting many of them below the poverty line, but it would have been disastrous for the city. As you may or may not know, CalPERS pensions are portable. If you're a CalPERS employee and you have a certain pension program, and all of a sudden your city drops out of CalPERS, you have 6 months to go somewhere else and resume your CalPERS pension. So given all the cuts that Stockton City employees have already endured, it was clear that the one place you didn't want to be standing if the city cut pensions was out the front door of Stockton City Hall, because you would have been flattened in a stampede of public employees leaving the city of Stockton, which would have had a real struggle to staff and continue municipal operations. The city would have gone from being distressed to somewhere between distressed and on the brink of a municipal breakdown. And the judge clearly realized that and took that into account.
Okay, well, Bill.
As for the CalPERS part, as for the legal ruling, the judge used the metaphor of a gate. He said the state is the gatekeeper of bankruptcy. It can prohibit bankruptcy, which some states do. California permits it. It can impose preconditions, as California did with AB 506, the law that requires pre-bankruptcy negotiations with creditors. Mm-hmm. But, he said, once the municipality passes through the gate, the state relinquishes its authority to Uncle Sam, and then only Congress can edit or modify the Uniform Bankruptcy Code. So all of the state legislation that buttressed CalPERS' vaunted immunity and all of the case law from the California courts that buttressed that immunity was simply invalid. Right. And that's the separation of powers inherent in the U.S. Constitution. Yeah. It's once you're in bankruptcy court, it's Uncle Sam's game, and he can cut any contract.
Right. It's the supremacy clause. Bill McEwen, you're looking at this from a little bit of a distance here in Fresno. What are your thoughts about the bankruptcy judge's ruling? Good ruling, bad ruling?
Well, I think the initial comments are, this is what can happen in theory. Then the judge has to contemplate reality. And the other thing here is Franklin Templeton, you're dealing with very savvy investors. They were supposed to do their due diligence. And at the end of the day, if they couldn't come to an agreement, kind of shame on them.
Mike.
Yeah, I agree with what's been said. The judge made the right decision in this.
Well, I want to ask Mike Fitzgerald, the Stockton Record. Will Stockton's restructuring and debt cutting plan keep the city out of the red and avoid a second bankruptcy? Are we going to be revisiting this issue all over again in a couple of years?
Well, only time will tell, but I think it's pretty clear that this is a sound fiscal plan. It was the city hired a fiscal genius to project out 30 years. It has one of the most savvy and conservative fiscal models of any city in California. It really took a long, because it has debts to pay for 30 years, so it had to like budget for 30 years, and it did that. And in addition to that, the judge has to evaluate the proposed bankruptcy exit plan in terms of its sustainability. If Judge Klein had thought this plan was going to bring Stockton into Chapter 18, that is a second bankruptcy, he never would have approved it. So I think that Stockton has laid a very strong groundwork for its staying out of bankruptcy court, but even for a measure of recovery and a better future.
So, Bill McEwen with the Fresno Bee, what's the takeaway of the Stockton decision for other California cities?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways is transparency, and also elected, people on city councils, they really have to contemplate contracts when they come up. In the case of Fresno City Hall, having covered it for many years, I saw times when there would be a new labor agreement, and basically the details were written out on a couple sheets of paper for council members, and there were no projections on impacts, long-term impacts, particularly with pension obligations. So I think what's happened in Stockton and elsewhere, there's heightened awareness about what can happen, and you would hope that the people you would elect would be very diligent about these things. And the flip side is also on investments. I can remember at the time with Fresno Mayor Alan Autry, where he was so excited about what Stockton was doing in terms of capital projects and saying, we need to do that here. Well, Fresno did a little bit of that and got in trouble, but thank goodness it didn't go as far as Stockton was going.
Yeah, it's interesting. In these kinds of negotiations, it's very easy to see the salary increase. That's very apparent. But the pension obligations are so out in the future that it's easy for politicians and the public to kind of ignore them, I guess, from time to time.
And, Mark, there's one other point to make, which City of Fresno has a completely different pension system. And City of Fresno pensions are self-funded. Fresno has its own pension program, and believe it or not, it's been very well run through the years, and it's very well funded. So it didn't have that kind of liability hanging over its head in its financial troubles.
Okay,
but there's another category of expenditure, and that's municipal bond. And you're very right that one of Stockton's big mistakes was not to reckon the true cost of the expenditures that the council was approving. So they didn't really know how much these bonds they were floating were going to cost them over time, how much these public employee enhancements were going to cost over time, how much their capital improvement projects were going to cost over time. And they based the repayments on very rosy projections.
I think that's probably
finances on rosy projections, cities, because bad times are just around the corner, and always tote up the long-term cost so that you know the full cost of the expenditure that you're approving. Because if the Stockton Council had known the true cost of the expenditures it was approving, I doubt very much they would have approved many of those costs.
Well, it sounds to me like that's a recommendation that cities hire more math majors. Anyway, when we get back, we'll talk more about public employee pensions. This is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580-1059 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking about public employee pension issues in Valley cities and counties with Bill McEwen of the Fresno Bee and Roger Phillips and Mike Fitzgerald with the Stockton Register. According to the State Comptroller's Office, pension payments by local governments in California have almost tripled in the last decade, from $6.4 billion in 2003 to $17.5 billion in 2013. So Mike Fitzgerald with the Stockton Record, I want to ask you, it seems like police and fire enjoy the most favorable pension formulas. And as such, they represent the lion's share of most cities and counties' pension obligations. Do you think that police and fire enjoy a political sweet spot when it comes to pay and benefits, getting little resistance from Democrats because they don't want to be perceived as anti-union, and getting little resistance from Republicans because they don't want to be perceived as weak on crime?
Well, we're talking about things on the municipal level, and council offices are nominally nonpartisan. But what you have here is a political environment in which all candidates want the endorsement of law enforcement. And law enforcement over the years become very canny about handing out its endorsements. They don't just give you an endorsement because you have pledged to be tough on crime or support some local version of three strikes or something like that. They go behind closed doors and they discuss, will you offer us this, will you support this enhancement to our benefits package? Will you increase our salary? Will you increase our pensions? Will you give us more favorable working conditions? And often those deals are made, out of the public eye and are not foremost on the public, in the public debate. So we don't even really know, or at least we didn't until these are done deals. So, that is going to be in endemic to any municipality. It's the same. It was ever thus, and it will always be that way. But Stockton's bankruptcy shows the need to get those deals out before the public. I mean, the city's fiscal team has to dig in and understand the true fiscal ramifications of the proposed increases. The council has to know clearly the true cost of the expenditures that they are called on to vote. And the public needs to understand that in terms of, for instance, if you're going to give this much more money to police, fire, or other public employee unions, that may involve some takeaways elsewhere, from library hours, from filling potholes, from fixing the municipal forest. Anything that a city does, you're going to have to rob Peter to pay Paul.
Well, let me ask you, Bill McEwen, typically public safety, police and fire, take up 70-80% of a municipality's budget. Are those kinds of the numbers of pay and benefits for police and fire just not getting the attention they deserve?
Well, I think they get the attention. First of all, I want to address your theory about Democrats don't want to be anti-union, Republicans don't want to be weak on crime. No one wants to be out there as being weak on crime.
Right.
So you've absolutely nailed that. You know, it's not really commonly known in Fresno, but for example, if you live in the city of Fresno, you pay an extra property tax override that goes directly to pay for City of Fresno police and fire pensions. Most people look at their tax bills, they don't even realize that they're doing that. I would have to say specifically with the City of Fresno, again, the police and fire pensions are more modest than they are in other places, even in the Valley or around the state. And the other point I want to make is what Mike talked about earlier, which is in the Valley where we have, you know, non-diversified economy, generally an underperforming economy, low rates of educational attainment. You also have high crime rates. So here you have impoverished people wanting safety. So there's a lot of interest in what happens with the police department, fire department. So it's kind of a double whammy situation. You have less money to pay for these services, yet the public is always crying for these services.
A large need and not enough money to pay for it. But let me ask you this, Bill, because Mike kind of brought this up earlier, and that is, what's the best way to resolve these public employee pay and pension issues? I mean, should we be letting city councils vote on this? Should we give it to the voters as a referendum? Should we give it to impartial arbitrators, or do we let the parties themselves negotiate this at the bargaining table?
Well, that would depend on you know, the city charter and how the city.
But what's is I'm asking?
Set up.
What do you think is the best idea? I mean, Mike's implying that you know we need to negotiate in the sunshine, and he and I had an earlier conversation this week actually talking about this, and the question was, is that workable? Could you do that? Do you think that would work? If we had a voter referendum on a contract?
No, you're not going to be going to the polls that often. You think about all the labor groups that a city has. You know, what I would like to see, though, is these proposals go to the city council or to a county board of supervisors, and there is some independent analysis presented along with that so people can see. But, you know, it gets back to people get the kind of government that they vote for or the kind of government that they agitate for. And it's up to the voters, rather than just complaining about the situation, they have to be involved. And am I hopeful that they'll be involved? Not with this 29.9% turnout we just had for the midterm election in California.
Well, Mike Fitzgerald, I want to give you a chance to weigh in on this. And how do you think these issues ought to be resolved?
Well, my answer may disappoint you, but when public employees and public managers go behind closed doors to bargain over public money, the public is often poorly served. And you can ameliorate that somewhat with a healthy civic culture. The gentleman from Fresno was talking about how, you know, we have a lot of people living below the poverty line, and I would add that often weakens a municipality's civic culture. So voters often don't understand, on the municipal level, often don't understand how city government works. They don't understand, they can't distinguish a good candidate from a bad one. They can't identify allies on the council. They're often prey to the manipulations of, you know, TV advertising or mailers. They're not deeply engaged. That is the weak civic culture. That is the weak tissue in which the virus of overcompensation takes hold. You have to have taxpayer associations and other community watchdogs. We have a good government group that was formed that is trying to produce strong candidates. I myself wrote a book on Stockton government and how it works so that more people – it's being taught in Stockton Unified School District. It's the largest school district is now teaching it as a civics book so that more people will understand how city government works. Because bottom line, it's like a negotiating table, and the unions are at that table, business elites are at that table, developers are at that table. If the public isn't there as well, than the these other interests exercise inordinate influence.
Well, let me throw in my two cents a little bit. I full disclosure, I'm a federal mediator and federal arbitrator of labor management disputes, so I have a little bit of information or knowledge in this area. My concern, I guess, with what you're saying, Mike, is I don't know how you negotiate in the sunshine, frankly, because if you do that in the public eye, what happens is both parties start to posture, and you never, and typically as a mediator, you find out the truth of the parties behind closed doors. That's when they let their hair down and really tell you what the bottom line is. So I just don't know how workable that is. But that's a philosophical discussion for another day. I want to ask you guys around the table, we only got a minute left in the segment. What are your thoughts going forward? And we'll start with Roger. Do you think negotiations going forward in Stockton, you're going to see more cuts to employee pay to maintain their pension levels?
Well, they're saving a lot of money, and they have been saving a lot of money, actually, because they have so many unfilled positions. And I think really the main issue is the police department, which is badly understaffed and which is having a really difficult time ramping up its staffing, even though there was sales tax passed by voters a year ago specifically to hire new officers. Right now, they've been collecting the tax for 6 or 7 months, and they've hired a whopping total of 6 new officers. Their goal is to hire 120 in 3 years. They've got 6 new officers, and the reason for that is that every time they hire a new officer, an old officer leaves. And crime, as people probably know, is an ongoing big issue here in Stockton. So I think, if anything, the city knows at this point that it needs to be more competitive with regard to hiring police officers, and it needs to address that through bargaining. And now that the bankruptcy's out of the way, it's possible that
we'll see more of that.
Be able to address.
Okay.
That issue.
Well, we're running up against a hard deadline. I apologize. So very quickly, Bill and Michael. So you think we're going to see higher taxes, reduced services, and lower benefits, Bill?
Well, I don't see higher taxes. Not in California.
So maybe reduce services.
You're going to see what you've been seeing all along, which is reduced services.
Okay, Mike. Just about 5 seconds. What do you think?
CalPERS will continue to advocate to sweeten the pot for public employees, and pensions and compensation will cost more and more until a reform occurs at the state level.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of our guests, Roger Phillips, Mike Fitzgerald with the Stockton Record, and Bill McEwen with the Fresno Bee, for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.